Hello, and welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Mario Ritter in Washington. Every day on this program, we bring you news from and about the United States and the world. This is what you will hear on today's program. Listen for a report about the world's trees from John Russell. Then, in our weekly science report, Brian Lynn tells us about a coming event on the moon. Next is our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, this report from Jonathan Evans.
A French beer-making business, or brewery, is using a special kind of bacteria to turn their beer blue. The beer, sold under the name Line, is an alcoholic drink made by the Hoppy Urban Brew Brewery. The brewery was looking for a way to make its drinks different from other kinds of beer. So, the beer maker partnered with Etika Spirulina. It is a business in northern France that wants to popularize its spirulina algae as a dietary aid. Sebastian Verbeke works at Hoppy Urban Brew. He told Reuters that the beer is selling well. It's getting an enormous amount of interest and curiosity on the part of the public, he said. The part of the spirulina that gives the beer its blue color is called phycocyanin. It is added to the beer during the beer-making process. Brewery worker Mathilde von Mansart described the taste of the beer as hoppy, light, and a little fruity. She added that the only evidence of the added algae was the blue color. Xavier Delanois owns the farm that provides the spirulina. He said after several tests, the brewery had found a mixture that pleased buyers. He said 1,500 bottles of the blue beer were sold between October and December last year. The brewery is now preparing to increase its production to meet demand. I'm Jonathan Evans.
From Peru to Australia, Madagascar to California, the world has many wonderful tree species. How many? A new study suggests there are about 73,000 kinds of trees, many of them still undiscovered. Such information reminds us of how much more we can learn about the Earth, experts say. Researchers recently revealed the world's largest forest database, one that is made up of more than 44 million trees at more than 100,000 locations in 90 countries. Researchers used the data to estimate that Earth has about 73,300 tree species. That number is about 14% higher than earlier estimates. Of that total, about 9,200 are estimated to exist based on mathematical predictions, but have not yet been identified by science. Many of these trees grow in South America, the researchers said. South America, home to the Amazon rainforest and Andean forests, was found to have 43% of the planet's tree species and the largest number of rare species, at about 8,200. Roberto Cazzola Gatti of the University of Bologna in Italy was the lead writer of the study that appeared recently in the publication Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. Trees and forests are much more than just oxygen producers, Gatti said, explaining that they play an important part in the health of the environment. He added, "Our society often considers forests as just pieces of wood and trees as natural resources. From trees and forests, humanity gets inspiration, relaxation, spirituality, and essentially the meaning of life." The research team estimated that South America has about 27,000 known tree species and 4,000 yet to be identified. The team also had estimates for other areas of the world. Europe and Asia have about 14,000 known species and 2,000 unknown species. Africa has 10,000 known species and 1,000 unknown. North America, including Central America, has 9,000 known and 2,000 unknown, while Oceania, including Australia, has 7,000 known and 2,000 unknown. Study co-writer Peter Reich of the University of Michigan and University of Minnesota said that by measuring the number of trees, our study can contribute to tree and forest conservation efforts. Conservation is a term that means the protection of plants, animals, and the natural environment. Reich believes that tree species diversity is key to maintaining healthy, productive forests and important to the global economy and to nature. He added that the information in the study is important because tree species are going extinct due to deforestation and climate change, and understanding the value of that diversity requires us to know what is there in the first place before we lose it. This study did not estimate the total number of individual trees globally, but 2015 research led by one of the co-authors put that number at about 3 trillion. The new study identified global tree diversity hotspots in the tropics and subtropics in South America, Central America, Africa, Asia, and Oceania. It also determined that about a third of known species can be classified as rare. The researchers used methods developed by mathematicians to estimate the number of unknown species by using the numbers of known species. Tropical and subtropical areas in South America may have 40% of these yet-to-be-identified species, they said. Jingjing Liang of Purdue University in Indiana was a co-writer of the study. "This study reminds us how little we know about our planet. There is so much more we need to learn about the Earth so that we can better protect it and conserve natural resources for future generations," Liang said. I'm John Russell.
Scientists say the remains of a rocket used to help deploy a satellite in 2015 is on a path to strike the moon in early March. The object was used to boost a SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket during its second stage of flight. Such leftover parts from spacecraft and equipment are known as space junk. The path of the rocket remains was first observed by American Bill Gray. He is an astronomer and the creator of Project Pluto, based in the northern U.S. state of Maine. He develops and sells software that can track the path of different space objects, including space junk. Gray has been publishing information about the object's path toward the moon on a website. He says his information is based on his own observations as well as those gathered from others. He writes that the object weighs about 4 tons and will strike the moon at a speed of 2.58 kilometers per second. Gray says all his data shows that the rocket will hit the far side of the moon on March 4th at 12:25 Universal Time. The far side of the moon faces away from Earth. The expected strike has also been confirmed by astrophysicist Jonathan McDowell as well as the U.S. Space Agency, NASA. McDowell is with the Center for Astrophysics, which is jointly operated by Harvard University in Massachusetts and the Smithsonian Institution. McDowell writes in an online statement that in the past, lots of junk from lunar missions has ended up hitting the moon. But he notes that this is the first time that something not explicitly targeted at the moon has been noticed to accidentally hit it. McDowell noted on Twitter that he finds the expected strike interesting, but not a big deal.
You are listening to the VOA Learning English Science Report. Be sure to listen again tomorrow for the Health and Lifestyle Report from Ana Mateo about popular houseplants.
Gray agreed and said the moon is regularly hit with larger objects moving faster than the remains of the SpaceX rocket. That, he notes, is how the moon got all its craters. It's well built to take that sort of abuse, Gray writes. McDowell said there are about 30 to 50 lost deep space objects like the SpaceX booster that have long been missing, some as old as 50 years. He added, probably some of them hit the moon without us noticing. McDowell said the remains of the SpaceX rocket is just one example of the growing problem and possible dangers of space junk. I think it's time for the world to get more serious about regulating and cataloging deep space activity, he wrote. A NASA spokeswoman told the French press agency AFP that the space agency sees the expected strike as an exciting research opportunity. But she said it might be difficult and take weeks to months to find the crater that is created. This is because the strike cannot be seen from Earth in real time. Also, NASA's Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter, which is currently orbiting the Moon, will not be in a position to observe the hit as it happens, the spokeswoman said. In the past, spacecraft have been crashed into the Moon on purpose for scientific experiments. But this is likely the first unplanned strike to be identified in this way. Gray thinks space junk should be directed toward the Moon whenever possible. If it hits the Moon, then we actually learn something from it, he said. I'm Brian Lynn.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. Steve Ember and Shirley Griffith talk about Calvin Coolidge and how he became President of the United States.
The early 1920s were a troubled time for the United States. Congress and the public began to discover crimes by several officials in the administration of President Warren Harding. Harding himself became seriously sick during a trip to Alaska and western states. He died in a hotel room in California in August 1923. Harding's vice president, Calvin Coolidge, became the new president. Both men were Republicans. Their policies on issues were much the same. Coolidge, however, was a very different man. He was completely honest. He was the kind of president the country needed to rebuild public trust in the government.
Calvin Coolidge was quiet and plain-looking. He was the son of a farmer and political leader from the small northeastern state of Vermont. Young Calvin worked at different jobs to pay for his college education. He became a lawyer. He moved to another northeastern state, Massachusetts, where he became active in Republican Party politics. First, he was elected mayor of the town. Then he was elected to the state legislature. Finally, he was elected governor of Massachusetts. It was as governor that Coolidge first became known throughout the United States.
In 1919, a group of policemen in the city of Boston tried to start a labor union. This violated the rules of the police department. So the commissioner of police suspended 19 of the union's leaders. The next day, almost 75% of Boston's policemen went on strike. Criminals walked freely through the city for two nights. They robbed stores and threatened public safety. Frightened Americans all across the country waited to see what Governor Coolidge would do.
He took strong action. He called on state troops to end the strike. He said, "There is no right to strike against the public safety by anybody, anywhere, anytime." Most Americans approved of what Coolidge did. the people of Massachusetts supported him too. They re-elected him governor by a large number of votes. Then in 1920, Republicans nominated Warren Harding for president. They nominated Calvin Coolidge for vice president. When President Harding died in California, Coolidge, his wife, and two sons moved to the White House.
America's 30th president was, in some ways, an unusual kind of person to lead the country. He said little. He showed few feelings. Coolidge's policies as president were not active. He tried to start as few new programs as possible. He was a conservative Republican who believed deeply that government should be small. Coolidge expressed his belief this way: if the federal government should go out of existence, most people would not note the difference. And once, he said, 4/5 of our troubles in this life would disappear if we would only sit down and keep still.
Coolidge believed that private business, not the federal government, should lead the country to greater wealth and happiness. He continued President Harding's policy of supporting American business both inside the United States and in other countries. The government under President Coolidge continued high taxes on imports in an effort to help American companies.
Many Americans shared Coolidge's ideas about small government and big business. In the early 1920s, many of them were living better than ever before. At that time, companies were growing larger. The prices of their stocks rose higher and higher. There were lots of jobs, and the wages of many workers increased. Americans agreed with their president that there was little need for government spending and government programs when private industry seemed so strong.
The American economy grew in the 1920s for several reasons. The World War had destroyed many factories and businesses in Europe. The United States did not suffer the same destruction. It was still a young country. It had great natural resources, trained workers, and a huge market within its own borders. When peace came, Americans found their economy stronger than any other in the world.
Changes in the American market also helped economic growth. Installment buying became popular. In this system, people could buy a product and pay for it over a period of several weeks or months. The total cost was higher because they had to pay interest. But the system made it possible for more people to buy more goods. It also made the idea of borrowing money more acceptable to many Americans.
The growing importance of the New York stock markets also helped economic growth in the 1920s. Millions of Americans bought shares of stock in companies that seemed to grow bigger every month. Such investment almost became a national game. People would buy shares of stock, then sell them when the stock rose in value. There were many stories of poor people who became rich overnight by buying the right stocks. The American Congress also helped the economy by lowering income taxes. People had more money to spend on new goods. Another important reason for economic growth was a change in the way American companies were operated.
During the 1920s, the idea of manufacturing goods in the most scientific way became very popular. The father of this idea of scientific management was an engineer, Frederick Taylor. Mr. Taylor developed a system to study manufacturing. He studied each machine involved in the process. He studied how much work each person did. He studied how goods moved from one part of a factory to another. Then he offered ideas to business owners about ways to produce goods faster and for less cost.
Taylor's ideas of scientific management appealed to business owners. Automobile manufacturer Henry Ford proved that the ideas could work in his new car factory in the state of Michigan. Ford used the assembly line system of production. In this system, each worker did one thing to a product as it moved through the factory. This helped cut prices and increase wages.
Ford and other businessmen learned a great deal about how to control costs, set prices, and decide how much to produce. All these changes in production and marketing helped Ford and other American companies grow larger and stronger. Henry Ford's Model T car became popular throughout the country. So did other new products, radios, refrigerators for cooling food, vacuums to clean carpets, ready-made cigarettes, beauty products. Americans in the 1920s began to buy all kinds of new products they had never used before.
Calvin Coolidge was in the White House. However, business led the nation. Times were good. Americans trusted business and its leaders. It became an honor to call someone a businessman. Colleges organized business classes. Middle-class citizens in almost every city and town gathered to discuss business ideas. President Coolidge spoke for millions of Americans when he said, "The chief business of the American people is business."
Coolidge represented traditional values and a simple way of life. He knew exactly how every dollar he earned was saved or spent, and he spent no more money than was necessary. The strange thing was that Coolidge was extremely popular with a public that was spending large amounts of money. Some economic experts warned that the country's quick economic growth would end in economic depression. Most Americans, however, believed that the good times had come to stay. They enjoyed the good things in life that work and success in business could bring. On our next program, we will see how the economic growth of the 1920s brought exciting changes to the day-to-day life of millions of Americans.
That's our program for today. We hope these stories have informed you and helped improve your understanding of American English. I'm Mario Ritter, reporting from Washington. For all of us here at VOA Learning English, Thanks for spending some time with us today. Join us tomorrow for another Learning English program from the Voice of America.